ball spark.
You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Friday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Hope everybody had a safe trip to work this morning as the snow moved in overnight. I got back from the 6A girls tournament, some obligations I had yesterday up at Carl Albert. Like 12:30, nothing was happening yet, and then you wake up to a winter wonderland. So sometime in those next, 5 hours or so between going to sleep and waking up, obviously things changed. It was cold when I got home, but nothing precipitating. But so hopefully everybody's safe. Everybody, just take your time. Be cautious. It's a little bit slick, but it's not terrible. So just take your time and make it to work safely, and then hopefully everybody kind of gets out of here early on a Friday to get back home and be where you need to be. And then, of course, it's going to warm up, and all this will be gone probably by tomorrow afternoon, or for sure on Sunday, I think. Won't even know that any of this ever happened. Just kind of a one-day deal, kind of a 12-hour bug, as it were, here on a Friday. Atha is up at OU, at Lloyd Noble. He's helping out with the 6A and 5A state tournaments. On the production side of things, so he is going to be out. Just got me today, so fire in anything you want to talk about. I've got all kinds of high school basketball, as 2A through 6A has reached the semifinal round. There will be 8 games at OU today in 5A and 6A. There will be 8 games at the Big House just starting right now with 4A and 2A and then 3A. Therefore, semifinals will be at UConn High School. So everybody got to play the first round in the Big House. Then 2A and 4A get the honor of staying there for their semifinals and the finals. 3A had to jot on out to UConn. And then they'll be back in the Big House tomorrow with 6 state title games, 4 down in Norman, tomorrow with 5A and 6A. So we got all kinds of high school hoops. Oklahoma, speaking of Norman, the Oklahoma Sooners got a win last night, a surprising win over Baylor. It's a game they had to have. Now, where are they? Is that enough to get into the tournament? Do they need to beat Texas Tech tonight? It's kind of a mixed bag if you look around on the bracketology, so we'll get into that. The NFL, my goodness, it's just gone mad with all the trades. This is fantastic. I think it signals one thing. We kind of brought it up on Wednesday with the way these trades are being made and the positioning. If you're a team that needs a quarterback, I'm afraid this isn't the right draft for you, at least from a scout standpoint and the really high end. Doesn't look like many people believe that any of those guys are long-term answers at the quarterback spot. Now, does that mean there won't be a good one? No, there probably will be. It's just hard to figure out which one that's going to be. And nobody has separated themselves. Nobody seems to be that real high-end talent like what we saw last year with, 4 guys going in the top 15 at the quarterback spot. So I think that's what, if you're looking ahead to the draft at the end of April, it doesn't seem like there's very many people out there in the NFL world that are overly excited about any of these quarterbacks. I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing all this chaos right now, not only trading quarterbacks, then yesterday Khalil Mack moves on. I mean, it's just it's a free-for-all right now in the NFL, and that's why the NFL rules sports. They really nothing going on, waiting on the year to end and then free agency to begin next week, and it's still dominating the headlines with everything that's going on. Kind of a blip on the radar screen yesterday afternoon. We're going to have baseball. I wonder how many people know. It was like my phone didn't even buzz for an update, which is just crazy. But owners and players got together. They made a deal. We're going to get all 162 games. Everybody's buzzing down to their spring training location starting on Sunday. I think April 7th is the date that the season will start. So less than a month away from baseball. I can't believe that things came together this quickly. There's going to be some changes. We'll tell you kind of what those are. The Players' Championship off to a wet start down at TPC Sawgrass. Wednesday, the Hall of Fame induction ceremony was held, and one Tiger Woods was inducted into the Hall of Fame. You know, obviously not playing this week. You wonder, you know, is the Masters a possibility for the folks around here? That I know a bunch of people going up toward the end of May at the PGA Championship. Will Tiger Woods be on the scene there at Southern Hills? Man, it doesn't feel like it, but who knows? As he hadn't really made a whole bunch of guarantees or statements about what his availability will be. He's kind of, I know he talked about being frustrated a little bit with the pace of his recovery. I mean, if you watched him play in the father-son thing back in the fall, obviously the golf part of it isn't the issue. It's going to be walking, and turns out they don't give you carts for a lot of that. So we'll see. But it'd be nice to see him back out there. And I think as he's gotten older, the appreciation is a little bit different for him. And he's a big part of that too. And this wreck and all the things that have happened in his personal life, I think have really made him a little bit more personable to all the people that are fans of golf, and even the guys that are his contemporaries as well, out on the golf course. It just seems like a softer side has been allowed to get out of there from Tiger. And what we saw on Wednesday night was another part of that, with his daughter introducing him and whatnot. So that's kind of what we've got on the plate: NFL, baseball, college basketball, high school basketball, Players Championship, all kinds of things. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. That's 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, there are a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. You can log on to KADSAM.com, or you can download the Paragon Communications app. The app has all things Paragon. It's got all of the radio stations. It's got the Penny News. It's got Big Elk TV and Paragon TV. As those have wrapped up the basketball season with what happened yesterday that we'll get into right here off the top of the show. 225-9698. We also got the Skinny on Sports podcast. If you missed the show entirely, you can go back and catch what we had to say about certain topics. All right, so high school hoops dominating, at least in the state right now, with the larger classes into the semifinal round. There's already games going on both at OU and down at the Big House. Possible upset brewing in Class 4A girls. The matchup everybody wants to see tomorrow is Tuttle and Class in SAS. Well, right now, in the first quarter, the Holland Hall Dutch are having a little bit of something to say about that, leading 17-10 over Klassen in the first game. Weatherford Tuttle coming up next at 10:30 there at the Big House. So yesterday, Merritt Oilerettes, man, did they fight hard against number 2 Pecola. Merritt came in 21-5 on the season, Pecola 25-1. The Lady Indians were Class 2A's number 2, just barely behind number 1 Howe, two-time defending state champions. And Merritt was right there throughout. The Oilerettes had a four-point lead at halftime, 19-15. Pecola made a run in the third quarter, took the lead, and it was just kind of back and forth there. But before, you know, in the fourth quarter with about 3 minutes left, Pecola pulled out to a nine-point lead. But even then, Merritt didn't quit battling as they brought it back within five, I think, maybe even four at one point there toward the end. But ultimately, Merritt falls 41-35. But a heck of a season for the Oilerettes. They were a team that felt that disappointment of not being able to qualify for that 2A state tournament last year down in Chickasha, made it through the consolation bracket all the way to the final, and then ran into a Latta team that just had every answer that night defensively, and the Oilerettes couldn't put points on the board. And, you know, I think ultimately that was their fatal flaw, was just – you know, being able to score it enough. But defensively, they were great all season long. And then yesterday, obviously that score is down right where they wanted it to be, right where they were able to have a chance to win that game against Pecola with the winner only in the low 40s. I mean, that was the game that they had to play. That's the game, the pace that it had to be, the type of game it had to be. And the Oilerettes were right there until the end. So congratulations, Coach Doherty. In the Merritt Oilerettes, I know, I think, what, three seniors for sure, Jamie Peffer and the two Dailies, Pollard and Taylor. They had a heck of a career, and culminated in the first state tournament appearance for the Oilerettes since 2010. And then not only just to get there, then to make a hand and make a great showing and almost pull off what would have been a pretty big upset in that 2A bracket. So the Oilerettes finish up the season 21-6 and a quarterfinal appearance in the state tournament. For today, let's keep on going yesterday. I was up at Carl Albert with 6A girls. And, man, it's just a different game. Like, you know, we saw two fantastic games last Saturday in the Class A and the Class B state championship games inside the Big House. A couple of games that finished up with the team behind having shots to win or take it to overtime. They really competitive, really fun, but it's just a different game that is played at that 6A level. The physicality, and you can just you can see how much they're how prepared for it those teams are, how prepared the coaches are. They know what they're getting into before they ever step foot on the floor. And so a lot of the things that, you know, if it was in the lower classifications, would cause riots in the stands. Well, watching the way that the game is officiated, everybody kind of knows the deal. And it really, in a lot of ways, it allows the individual talents and the individual athleticism and then some of the team stuff as well to be able to shine through. You know, it's physical on the perimeter, maybe not as much down low. You know, you can get more. It seemed like you got more foul calls at the bucket than you did, you know, outside the 3-point line. But there's some really really good teams. Edmund North is phenomenal. For my eye, at least on one day, on a quarterfinal Thursday up there at Carl Albert yesterday. Good luck beating that team. Edmund North was just crisp, athletic, could shoot, could move it. They were and play defense as well, only allowing Stillwater to score 37 points in the game as they beat them 72-37. Local tie to that team, Dandy Newton, Dandy Peeler now, graduated with me actually here at Elk City in 99. She coached at Edmund Memorial. She coached at Choctaw. She's now in the administration, but her daughter is a freshman first off the bench on that Edmund North team. And so that was kind of cool to see, look out there and see a former classmate having a daughter and having success on that team. It'll be interesting to see because Edmund North they're flying the flag for the western side of the state. The other three teams in the semifinals all come from the same conference with Union, Bixby, and also Sand Springs. Union and Bixby playing right now down there at OU. So I'll be interested to see if Edmund North was as good as what they looked, at least on that one day. Well, you know, there was a really great story on the other side for Stillwater. Their coach, Kendra Kilpatrick, was diagnosed with breast cancer. She's been battling that for a couple of years now. And so for her to get her team to the state tournament, first time in a long, I think 17 years it's been since Stillwater was at the girls' state tournament. So that was a really cool story to follow, but her team was just way overmatched with the strength that Edmund North had. So it was kind of a cool perspective for me, I guess, after watching, you know, even in the 4A level, it can get physical at times, but it's not really allowed to be what I saw yesterday. And that's, you know, just the way the game is officiated. And I'm sure, you know, those guys that are used to, you know, calling that game that way is the, you know, the guys that are chosen. And it was interesting to me that all four were called the exact same way. There wasn't a game where you thought, those guys, you know, this crew or those guys and gals, because there were definitely some gals out there as well. They're not. They're all the same in the game, and I think that helps with the consistency of the teams, and it helps with being able to know what to expect and to keep the flow going. You know, we always kind of joke around here. It feels like, you know, with me calling the Elk City games versus the small schools, You know, I'm middle of the third quarter of a boys' game on just a normal Tuesday night, and everybody else is done. And because of the slower, the amount of times the whistle blows and, you know, a little bit longer in at halftime and all that kind of stuff leads to, you know, maybe 2.5 hour broadcasts, which, or 3 hour broadcasts sometimes. But yesterday, that wasn't the case. Those games zipped right by. I think you notice that the further along we get, the players end up being the ones that make the difference in the outcome. They're allowed to do that. And so that's a kudos to all those officials. And I think they said there's over 50 working these four state tournaments in the various locations with the sub-sites. Big House, UConn, we were at Carl Albert. I know there's Norman North had some games. Noble had some games. OU had games. So there was a lot of different spots that require, you know, the three officials per game. So kudos to those guys. And I know that's a heck of an honor for everybody that's able to do that. So let's kind of run down. I guess I'll just run down the schedule. If you want to brave the elements, go up there and watch right now. 4A girls is on tap at the Big House. Holland Class and nearing halftime. That's 4A girls semifinal, followed by Weatherford and Tuttle. That'll be the 10:30 game. 2A girls is next, I believe. Yes, 2A girls at noon, number 3 Dale and number 2 Pecola, and then follow that one up by Howe and Hooker. As you know, Jared and I have kind of got on the rankings discussion throughout these playoff runs for the different classifications, and you know, you see an unranked team in Tushka win Class A boys, you know, and you look around like, what is going on? How is, you know, why is that happening? How does it happen? How do you get better? 2A through 4A girls didn't have that problem, because when you look up in the semifinals of 4A girls, it's 1 through 4 playing each other. They got it exactly right with the teams that are left. It's number 1 Tuttle, number 4 Weatherford, Holland and Klassener, number 3 and number 2. Then you go to the 3A bracket. Exact same thing. 1 and 4 versus 3 and 2. And oh, by the way, 2A is that way as well. So kudos to the coaches there. I'm sure there's a plethora of reasons why that happens, from less schools to just paying more attention. But the 2A, 3A, and 4A girls coaches obviously knew. They paid more attention, or whatever the – maybe that's what the OSSAA needs to look into, is why did these guys and gals get it so right? Was it just the clear top four and everybody else was a little bit behind? Or is there some kind of formula, some kind of method to what those three classes do to get things right? I mean, you can't nail it any better than what those three did. So that's pretty interesting after what we saw last weekend with an unranked team winning the state title. Then fast forward just a week later, and all three of those classes have ranked the rankings exactly correct with 1, 2, 3, and 4 in those three girls' classes, all in the semifinals. There's one game in the 3A bracket that I wanted to talk about on the boys' side. It's the nightcap tonight at UConn. And you've got, no matter the result, there's going to be chances for history. And the game is Millwood and Marlow. Marlow is trying to become the first school in Oklahoma high school history to win football, wrestling, and basketball all in the same year. Collinsville had that opportunity. They were blown out yesterday by Carl Albert, so they're not going to be able to win on the basketball side. So Marlow is playing Millwood. Marlow can do that, football, wrestling, and basketball. On the other side for Millwood, they're kind of in a race right now with Booker T. Washington to the top of the state tournament's wins list and also state titles. They trail the Hornets by one. Booker T. is going to be in the 6A boys semifinals tonight. So they're still going. I think they've got 16 titles, Millwood with 15. But then also state tournament wins. Those teams are tied with Tulsa Central with 69 state tournament wins in their history. And Millwood's record, Millwood's win percentage has got to be, if it's not the best for that many games, somebody is doing a heck of a job. You know, like say minimum of 50 games. They've played 88 state tournament games. They've won 69 of them. 69-19 for Millwood's program in their history in the state tournament going into tonight's game against Marlow. So that's kind of one of those things that you don't see very often, but both teams with the chance to kind of chase history in that 3A boys bracket. That's High School Hoops. Last weekend of High School Hoops. It's going to be a good one. Tomorrow at OU for 5A and 6A finals, 2A through 4A in the Big House. Chances for some really cool stuff to be going on, really cool games to be there for tomorrow. Hey, don't forget, coming up tomorrow, we had Coach Rich on yesterday from Sayre. They're going to be doing a really cool thing with the Oklahoma Outlaws and the Dodge City Gamblers. It's a league that Lindy Waters played in last year. Actually, the team he played for was that team out of Enid at Oklahoma Outlaws. And now you look to see where he's at coming through the blue and all the way up to the Thunder level into the NBA. Coach Richie described it as like double-A baseball, the competition level that's there, kind of a mix between that and junior college. A bunch of talented guys are just looking for a break to be able to get on a G League team or maybe even into the NBA like Waters has done. So they're going to be over at Sayre. There's going to be a game at 4 o'clock tomorrow. You can buy tickets at the door, $10 for adults, $5 for kids. But before that, at noon, you can buy a $5 ticket for your kids ages 8 through 14. That will get them into a skills camp that's going to be put on by those guys that are going to be in Sayre for that game. So tomorrow, noon to 2, ages 8 through 14, there's going to be a skills camp ahead of that game at 4 o'clock at Sayre High School tomorrow. So go out and support that. It's a really neat thing, and hopefully with the support of not only the Sayre community but everybody around, the surrounding towns, that ends up being something that can be a yearly event and just kind of grow and organically get bigger and bigger and bigger. So if you can, if you got time, it's a weird weekend with spring break starting, obviously, and then you've got state tournament or state finals here and there all across the Oklahoma City area. But if you can, go over and support that. It's a really neat thing that's coming to Sayre tomorrow. 4 o'clock for the game, 12 to 2 for that skills camp for the kids ages 8 through 14. Man, what a surprise in Kansas City last night. Pleasant surprise if you're, an OU fan. Oklahoma goes up and beats Baylor 72-67. The Bears had swept the season series with a 10 and a 14-point win over Oklahoma. It seemed like a horrible matchup for Oklahoma. Hey, Jared and I even kicked around. You'd almost rather have played Kansas just because of the way you played, that OU played Kansas in the regular season. But the Sooners, with an offensive explosion in the second half, 45 points against Baylor in the second half, that's a phenomenal half of basketball. When you look at the shooting stats for OU, 26 of 51 from the field, that's 51%. The big number is 11 of 21 from three. You knock down almost 53% of your threes, taking that much volume. Then 9 of 12 from the line. And a number that I would have to go back, but I know early in the season, the first quarter or half of the season, the number that determined wins and losses for Oklahoma was rebounding, and they out-rebound the Bears by a rebound, 35 to 34. And so, that has been a stat that's a really telling stat for OU throughout the season. If they're able to compete and even win that rebounding battle, they've won a vast majority of their games when they've been able to do it. And then when they haven't, they've gotten beaten up at times. Obviously, the question now is that enough? Is that enough for Oklahoma to be in the NCAA tournament? 18-14, now 8-11 in conference with that win. It's kind of a mixed bag of thoughts from the different bracketology people. Some think yes, some think no. I can guarantee if Oklahoma is able to go out and beat Texas Tech tonight, then that will be enough to get the Sooners into the tournament. That's going to be an 8:30 tip, the second of two semifinals. The other is TCU and Kansas. Now, in the other side of that Big 12 tournament bracket. But if Oklahoma can win again over over Texas Tech, they had beaten them earlier this season in Norman. If they can get that win on a neutral site, then yes, that is enough. And Oklahoma will absolutely be in the NCAA tournament bracket come Sunday afternoon. If not, then everybody's going to be on pins and needles trying to figure out, okay, is that enough? And figure out, what's everybody else on the bubble doing? Who's winning? Who's not? You know, and who do you need to be rooting for all day today, really? Because a lot of these tournaments are in quarterfinals or semifinals. There's certainly some teams that if you're an OU fan, you'd like to see lose, A&M being one of those. You don't – A&M beating Auburn, Indiana beating Illinois would not be good for the bubble for Oklahoma. Rutgers and Iowa is another one. You need the top-seeded teams to win these games. In these other conferences to just help out your case and really, as much as anything else, not allow some of these other teams to get some signature wins. You know, A&M won an overtime game yesterday against Florida. Indiana knocked off Michigan, which kind of seemed like a bubble game, you know, kind of a win and you're still going, lose, and you're probably on the wrong side of the bubble in that game for those two teams. And so if you're a Sooner fan, you know, Illinois, Auburn, take care of business. Don't let A&M, Indiana get another, you know, quad one win, another signature win, especially A&M being able to knock off number four Auburn. That would be almost guarantee them a spot. But at the same time, you go out and take care of business. If you're able to pull off another upset, make your way into the Big 12 tournament finals, then I think you ought to feel really, really good no matter what happens in the finals. That Oklahoma would have their spot in the tournament with the win today. If not, it'll be nail-biting time come Sunday afternoon when that bracket is released. NFL, man, I don't remember any time where the trademark has been this completely volatile. And it's not... I mean, you see trades here and there, but you don't see trades with the names that are attached. You know, Russell Wilson, we talked about that the day after it happened. That might be the biggest trade in the history of the NFL, with a guy at that age, with whatever, you know, seemingly having a ton in his tank, especially when you look at the guys before him. You know, Rodgers nearing 40. Obviously, Brady was fantastic into his early 40s. And Russell Wilson being only 32 with two Super Bowl appearances to his credit, one title, and all of a sudden he's available via the trade. And I'm still of the opinion that Seattle did not get enough for a guy like that. Just two ones and two twos. I mean, the Rams had to give up four number ones for Matthew Stafford. And when that trade was made and when this trade is made, it's not even close who's the better player. It's clearly Russell Wilson when the trades are made. Now, since Stafford got traded, obviously he's put a Lombardi in the trophy case. And where does that how much does that move him up kind of in the pantheon and the rankings of the quarterbacks now? But Russell Wilson, far more accomplished than what Matthew Stafford was when Stafford got traded out to the Rams. And for Denver to only have to give up two ones. I mean, I know that's still a bunch, two ones and two twos, but nothing like what the Lions were able to get from the Rams. So, man, that's you just don't see it. And then yesterday, Khalil Mack is traded back out to the Chargers. And the AFC West just gets stronger and stronger. And the AFC as a whole is just it feels like, because of the quarterbacks they've gotten to come into that conference, when you compare those the high end top end talent at the quarterback spot in the AFC, you're talking about Josh Allen, you know, Lamar Jackson has won an MVP, Joe Burrow seems like he's on a fast track to being, you know, one of the top three or four quarterbacks in the NFL. Still got Deshaun Watson hanging out there. I know there's a big day. It's a big day today for him, with some grand jury testimony going on. And what does that? How does that affect his future? And then the entire AFC West. You've got Wilson now with the Broncos, Mahomes, Derek Carr, and then Justin Herbert's on that fast track to being a superstar also. Man, that is, you know, every division has at least one. The West has four. And that's before you even start talking about some of these young guys that have flashed a little bit of potential. You know, with Mac Jones, Tua's been probably better than people give him credit for. You know, Baker Mayfield won a playoff game at Pittsburgh. You know, Tannehill's Tannehill. Serviceable, if not better than that. The AFC might have got better at the quarterback spot, shipping Carson Wentz out, although I still don't understand what the Colts are doing with really not much of a prospect of getting a quarterback. You know, in the draft, it doesn't seem like anybody wants those guys very high. But I wonder, the moves have been made. Now, how many teams are there that can really legitimately win the Super Bowl? Not, hey, yeah, I could see it. Like, oh, yeah, the break goes here or there. How many teams are there, in you guys' mind, can actually win the Super Bowl and name them? Like, is there four? Are there six? How many do you think there are? 225-9698. Shoot me a text. Give me a call. Tell me how many legitimate Super Bowl winning teams are there in the NFL after all these moves have been made. For me, I think there's guaranteed four. Guaranteed there's four. The Bills and the Chiefs obviously can win a Super Bowl. Those two are in at the top of any list of Super Bowl favorites. Those two teams can win the Super Bowl without any breaks almost. I mean, you got to have something along the way, but those two teams are set to win now with the quarterback spot and everything else that they're kind of building around those guys. Bills, Chiefs, to me, are shoe-ins as far as legitimate Super Bowl winning threats. In the NFC, I just think there's two there as well. And that's the Rams, and that's the Packers. The Packers are a little bit shakier to me just because of Aaron Rodgers' struggles in the playoffs. And then with the contract he's going to sign, obviously Devontae Adams being tagged, where does that leave them in free agency and what do they have to do in the draft? We'll see that coming up starting next week. When the free agency period opens up, as the NFL year opens up. But I think those two are there. And then there's a whole bunch of other teams that are kind of right on the periphery of being able to be kind of in that box with the rest of them. You know, what's Denver? How much does this change Denver? Having Russell Wilson, how much do you, you know, where do they fit in? The Chargers making the move with Mac, obviously Herbert. But, man, they seem so far away, not even being able to make the playoffs. Can you make – is that the jump you can make all the way to the top? I don't know. You know, Tennessee, how much better can Tannehill get? Do they need an upgrade? Can they make something happen to upgrade enough from Tannehill to be able to get into that box of legitimate Super Bowl contenders? They were the one seed this last year. And I don't think anybody took them serious as a real, true Super Bowl threat, and it was proved in the divisional round being knocked off by the Bengals. Where is Cincinnati? Was that just a flash in the pan, one-year wonder, or is Cincinnati, you know, built for the long haul? I know they got tons of cap room to go along with the season that they already had a year ago in that exciting Super Bowl. So is Cincinnati needing to be in that box? Then on the NFC side, Dallas. What can they do to fortify their position? You know, it feels like Amari Cooper's gone. It's just a matter of time. And it's a matter of can the Cowboys get somebody talked into giving them something for him, or they just kind of cut him outright? You know, where does Dallas end up through free agency in the draft with the spot that they're in as far as the salary cap? You know, Minnesota's a tricky team. Cousins, where's he? The new coach with Kevin O'Connor. That could be, you know, sneaky. Tampa Bay, is the band disintegrating? Are they going to get back together? And then a bunch of those teams out west with Arizona, Kyler. You know, how does that come together? Does that make a meteoric change between now and the season starting with them deciding that they can't handle him and make a move somewhere else? San Francisco, it looks like they're going the Trey Lance route. Where, you know, how much of an upgrade can he be over Jimmy G? They didn't need a ton. As they played the Rams right off their feet in that NFC title game and had a lead in the fourth quarter before Stafford engineered the comeback. So, you know, I think there's four guaranteed they can win the Super Bowl, two in each division with the Chiefs and the Bills, Packers and the Rams in the NFC. And then there's a whole bunch of other teams that are outside looking in right now that you could definitely see being one of those teams. It's just a matter of getting it done and what moves they can make to solidify their position and kind of grind forward into being one of the teams that are serious, serious contenders for next year's Super Bowl. And it'll all kind of start taking shape next week with the free agency first, then the draft at the end of April. And then before you know it, we'll be watching a fake game at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony and getting ready to kick off the football season. It'll happen fast, even though it seems like a long, long ways away. Get you an update at the Players' Championship. They're kind of grinding through the end of the first round. They had a long weather delay yesterday, and they couldn't get all the first rounds in, so the guys had to go back out there this morning, complete their first rounds. Then the second round will get underway. It looks like most everybody's through about – have all made the turn. Somewhere in the back nine of first rounds being completed down in Florida at TPC Sawgrass. A couple of guys atop the leaderboard, Tommy Fleetwood, Tom Hoagie, both shot 6-under par yesterday. Big group at 5-under, Kramer Hickok, Joaquin Niemann, Keith Mitchell, and also Anirban Lahiri. Those guys are done at 5-under. Kevin Kisner, Daniel Berger are on the golf course at 5-under par. Big group at 4-under. Names like Jason Day, Sam Burns, Abe Anser, former Oklahoma star, Harold Varner, Will Zalatoris, King Louie, Cameron Smith, John Rahm at 3-under par. Those guys are done. Not sure how much golf they're actually going to get in. The guys that finished yesterday are going to have a long wait for today because the guys out there finishing their first rounds will go right back out for their second rounds, and then they'll have to, you know, get to a certain point before the guys that started first yesterday will get back out there. So I would anticipate, even without any more weather delays, I'm not sure that they'll get the second round in today. Maybe some guys back out there early tomorrow morning to finish up second rounds before the cut is made, and then the weekend gets to get going. Other guys on the golf course at 3-under include Dustin Johnson, Scottie Scheffler, who's been white hot so far this season with two wins, one in Phoenix, one last week at Bay Hill. He's 3-under par with a few holes to go. Kepka, Xander Schauffele, some other names that are still out on the course at 3-under. Justin Thomas is 2-under out on the golf course. Justin Rose, same place. Let's see. Sergio finished at 1-under. Victor Hovland finished at 1-under. Jordan Spieth's out on the golf course at 1-under. I was thinking Rory was right in there, too. Must have passed him up. And so that's kind of an update from the Players' Championship as the unofficial fifth major in professional golf is the Players' Championship down there at TPC Sawgrass. It's always, you know, the culmination of that, of those last three holes on this golf course are always so much fun. You have the par 5 at 16 that most anybody there can get to and two, but it takes a nice kind of a rope hook tee shot around the corner, and then there's water right. There's been all kinds of crazy things happen on that hole throughout the years. Then, of course, the Island Green with the 17th, and probably the hardest hole is number 18. You know, the 17th gets all the love, gets all the accolades, and for good reason. I mean, it's one of those, you know, but if you take water away, it's really not, you know, it's 140 to 100, sometimes 125 yards to 160. With a big old green, those guys, you know, for the most part, can do that in their sleep. But, you know, the water and the pressure of trying to win that tournament coming down the stretch, we've seen some meltdowns, and we've also seen some guys really excel. I know Ricky Fowler a couple years ago came out of nowhere down the stretch. I think he finished like 7-under through his last six, and he actually birdied the Island Green a couple of different times that day in a playoff in regulation to be able to be the Players' Champion, and by far his biggest win of his career. So it's always a fun one. It feels like by the time it's over, you know, sometimes the cream rises to the top and the better players are battling it out. And then other times you get strange winners at this course. You know, Craig Perks, he's on TV now. You know, he's a guy that had a couple of miracle chip-ins down the stretch of when he won there at the Players. But no matter who's on the leaderboard, there's always big-time drama. And even no matter what the lead is, there's always big-time drama because there's always the chance of just an absolute meltdown on those last three holes with 16, 17, and 18. So that'll be a fun watch if the weather isn't very nice, but especially, you know, tomorrow. I know it's supposed to warm up, but, you know, that's always a fun watch there as the Players' Championship gets rounded up. And then as soon as that is over on Sunday, everyone in golf's attention focuses on Augusta, Georgia, April, 7th through the 10th. It goes right to, hey, here we are, it's Masters time. So I do think that I don't know, I lost my train of thought reading text message. Anyhow, so that's the Players. Let's see what else we got going on this weekend. I mentioned the stuff at Sayre tomorrow. Don't forget, 12 to 2, you can go over for the skills camp being put on by those the teams, Oklahoma Outlaws out of Enid. Dodge City's bringing down the Gamblers. They're going to have a kids camp 8 through 14 years of age. Get there before noon, sign up. It's $5 for a ticket to the game for kids, $10 for adults. That $5 ticket into the game that starts at 4 o'clock will get your kids into the skills camp being put on by those guys, the coaches and the players that'll be there. And it'd just be kind of, like Coach Rich said yesterday, just kind of hanging out around those guys. You know, if you're an 8 to 10, 12, 14-year-old kid, and you look up and see some dude that's 7 foot tall, it's just a shock to your system to see guys like that. And I know last weekend the only complaint that Wyatt had about the high school, the A and B state tournaments was he didn't get to see anybody dunk. Well, guess what? You go over there this weekend, go over there tomorrow to Sayre, you're going to see some dudes dunking it for sure in the game, before the game. So that's it's always fun to watch somebody dunk it. It just is, you know. It's not something you see in games a ton around at the high school level around here. You see it some, and it's always the one play that gets everybody to their feet screaming and yelling is a dunk. And so there'll be plenty of that, and it'll be a good time and good learning experience. And like I said earlier, if you can get out there, it'll be really good stuff to get out there and get people involved and get something like this to come back to Western Oklahoma at some point. Hopefully this is a yearly event that those guys can come down and do put on a camp for kids and put on a show in a game afterwards. So go over there to Sayre, support that. It'd be a lot of fun for your kids, a lot of fun for your families. Cheap entertainment too, you know, considering everything else, the prices of everything else that have skyrocketed and got a little bit out of hand. That's a pretty cheap afternoon of entertainment with a $10 ticket for an adult and $5 ticket for a kid. Update from the state tournaments. Klassen has completely flipped that game around against Hall and Hall this morning in 4A girls. Hall and Hall had as much as a 10-point lead at one time. Now Klassen leads by 11, 44-33. That's the fourth quarter score. Then also in the 6A, so that's 4A. 6A tournament at OU. Coming down the stretch of the first game of the day in 6A girls, Union leads Bixby 29-24. Another local tie to that 6A tournament, Misty Dupree, one of the stars of the last Elkett state championship team. Her husband is an assistant coach there at Union. So local ties on both sides of that semifinal bracket with Misty on the Union side and also Dandy's daughter playing for Edmond North on the other side. So that'd be kind of a cool thing if it ends up being Edmond North and Union in the final. Both teams with ties back to Western Oklahoma, ties back to right here in Elk City with Union and also Edmond North. Weather-wise, it's going to be cold. The snow is supposed to be wrapping up here pretty quick. I think by noon, all of that's going to move out, and then we start warming up with highs this weekend all the way up into the 60s, I think, the last time I looked. I haven't done my weather duties just yet. But, tomorrow, sunny, a high near 60, and then on Sunday, highs in the mid-60s with south winds returning to warm things up. Supposed to be a nice week next week, and then maybe some chance of showers toward the end of the week. So, everyone, enjoy the little bit of moisture that we're going to be getting. And we all know that we can use more and more and more of that. Big 12 semifinals tonight. Lots of high school basketball semifinals and finals. It's a basketball centric week. And when we come in here on Monday, we will know what the bracket looks like, and that'll be. It's starting to get to be your last opportunity to join us to play the Western Oklahoma Realty Bracket Challenge. We've got that set up on ESPN's website. Just go to the Men's Bracket Challenge. Our group is the Skinny on Sports 2022, so get involved. We'll have a prize at the end of it. And everybody loves to fill out a bracket. Have some bragging rights if you can outpick your buddy. It's a lot of fun, so come join us. Skinny on Sports 2022 is the group on the ESPN website, Western Oklahoma Realty Bracket Challenge. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll be back in here on Monday to discuss.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered around.